Hour number three, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Thursday. We're live at the Omni Nashville Hotel at Bar Lines. And I guess we should say that if you hear noise in the background, I don't know what's going on necessarily, but the fire alarm is going off, so either we're being invaded by the Klingons or somebody may have pulled it. I don't know, but we'll. So far, we're good. I think so. We're just gonna hang out
right
here for now. But we say hello to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, senior NHL writer with them, and of course, he is brought to you as always by Old National Bank. Get old, Greg. What's up?
Now I feel bad for not having done this interview on the streets of Manhattan, so I could have ambulances going by as your fire alarm goes off and really,
yes,
really capture some sound, some natural sound.
I'm now being told it's just a test, so we're good there. But yes, the natural sounds would be something for sure on the streets of New York. So I want to start with your colleague there at ESPN. Rachel has written an article about different trades that could be made after the roster freeze is lifted, which is going to start midnight on Saturday and go until December 28th. And the first one is Washington Capitals acquiring Ryan O'Reilly from the Predators with 25% salary retained, and the Preds would get forward Hendricks LaPierre and a 2026 first-round pick. I don't know much about Hendricks LaPierre, but could be interesting if Barry Trotz decided to make a move similar to that.
Yeah, Hendricks is a good prospect, good player, has a little sandpaper in his game, as it were, but you know, I think what Rachel captures is what the going rate for someone like O'Reilly could be, which is an established top prospect level player and then a first round pick going back the other way. I mean, given what teams need out there and given the market for centers, I still think O'Reilly is probably top of that food chain. You know, Philip Deneau with the LA Kings is someone to watch, who's kind of the same mode of player. He hasn't been getting much ice time with them, and I think the expectation is that he's going to probably be traded at some point. But as long as Calgary is hanging on to Nazem Kadri, and it looks like they are for at least for now, I think O'Reilly is clearly the class of the trade board when it comes to centers that have a good, solid 200-foot game.
Yeah, but what I'm interested to know is, you know, Barry was asked last week when he made a small trade sending Spencer Stastny to Edmonton. You know, he was asked if the recent play of the team has kind of changed how he might look at things. He said no, that GMs are all calling each other right now. He's listening. But, I mean, the team's playing better. So, it you know, and they're, what, 5, 6, 7 points out of a playoff spot, and it's not even the first of the year yet. So, in your mind, when is the point where a team like the Predators should maybe act on some of these phone calls, or, you know, how long do they sit and wait and see what the team does?
Oh, I don't think there's any harm in waiting until, you know, the Olympic break. I mean, give them some runway to see if they can play their way a little bit closer to the bubble. And if they don't, though, you know, I don't think it dramatically impacts anything. I think there's going to be teams that keep their powder dry in the hopes of acquiring Ryan O'Reilly, because obviously he's not just a player for the regular season, but his postseason pedigree is one that other players that might be on the market can't match. You know, listen, I checked the numbers on Stathletes, which is the analytics company that ESPN works with, because I wanted to see what they thought of the Predators' chances. They have the Predators at like a 20% chance of making the playoffs, which is not nothing, right? Like it's a lot higher than I thought it was going to be. So, you know, listen, there's been an uptick, obviously 6-4 in their last 10. Let's see how this thing plays out for a little bit. And then there's going to be plenty of time to make some of the changes that they probably end up making, assuming that this team can't rise up to the wild card.
Talking to Greg, I'm sorry. This alarm just gets louder and louder. I apologize, Greg, for all that. Greg, let me ask you this. The news here, Nick Saban buying into the Nashville Predators. Look, I know it doesn't make top story in NHL and for all you guys, but what does that look like from where you sit when a guy like Nick Saban buys into an NHL franchise? I think it's pretty damn cool.
I think it's cool, too. Not as cool as air raid sirens going off during an interview. but pretty cool nonetheless. Listen, I checked in on that when the news was announced. It is a pretty cool thing. You know, I think the NHL has certainly been an interesting place insofar as ownership goes. You know, we just saw the Pittsburgh Penguins get sold for like $1.7 billion. You know, the idea that you're going to have some ownership groups inviting some minority owners in. The Carolina Hurricanes, for example, are looking to sell a chunk of that team to help finance Tom Dundon's deal to buy the Portland Trailblazers. You know, it's an interesting time in the sense that sports teams are a extremely valuable commodity because sports remains one of the things that plays well on streaming and plays well on linear, and sports rights are going to be forever a valuable commodity because of the nature of that content. And so people want in, and, you know, seeing Saban buy in was kind of a cool thing. And hopefully down the line, maybe they can incorporate him into some promotional stuff down the line too.
I love it. Last night, the Carolina Hurricanes were in town, and somebody was talking about building that franchise. You know, they go nine seasons. They win the cup in 06. They go nine seasons, don't make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They change the uniforms in 18. They get back into it. And somebody said they built the team the right way. You just had to have patience with everything. And I go through and look at this team, the Carolina team. A, it doesn't get talked about enough, right? Because do we take a team like this for granted, Greg? Because they're just good every year.
We take them for granted because they're not better. Let's be honest. I mean, like, if this team had played for a cup, I think that they would be lauded more than they are. As it stands, they're a team that we do take for granted in the sense that every season they're always near the top of the division. They play extremely well fundamental defensive hockey under Rod Brind'Amour. And then when they get in the playoffs, it always seems like the same story, which is that they just can't get that one goal at a critical time or that one save in a critical time to get through the Eastern Conference. Now, they've tried to remedy that the last two seasons where they traded for Jake Gensel of the Penguins. And that didn't translate into you know, anything more than what they usually do in the playoffs. And they, of course, make the Mikko Rantanen trade, and that lasts only a handful of games before they flip them to Dallas. I think just the team they have now, despite not having one of those marquee scoring acquisitions like they've had the last couple of years, top to bottom might be their best offensive team they've had under Brind'Amour. Right. And so I actually think that they've got a real legit chance of emerging from the Eastern Conference, provided that, you know, Florida maybe doesn't get Barkov back on game one of the playoffs and does this thing again, because I think Carolina's got a really good team this year.
I think it's funny that the GM, Eric Tulsky, his first consulting after he started doing all the blogging stuff, his first consulting project was Nashville Predators during the 2012 season. I just find all the connections interesting in my life.
Well, Tulsky's someone that a lot of us in the media admire because it's aspirational. You know, like this guy didn't, you know, wasn't a Conn Smythe winner. You know, this guy was somebody who came in through the pretty much through the blogging community, but also being an absolute genius in his academic background, and then worked his way through the system, got the necessary experience working in front offices to eventually ascend to the top job in Carolina. And again, like, you think of the boldness that team has had in some of their acquisitions, that goes hand in hand with having somebody with an analytic mind and somebody who is able to, you know, take a real hard look at his own talent pool and make tough decisions on players in order to try to acquire better ones.
Greg Wyshynski is with us. With the acquisition of Quinn Hughes, do you think Minnesota is a cup caliber team?
So that's a tough question to answer for two reasons. One is that I still think they're a donut. I don't think they've got the center position right now, but I do think that you have to give them a little bit of leeway that the Quinn Hughes deal is not the last one they're going to make, and that they could remedy that situation, you know, down the line before the trade deadline. The second problem with answering that question is the fact that Colorado and Dallas exist. Yeah. and as good as they're going to be, and again, like, they've done a really good job now getting a defenseman in Quinn Hughes that is every bit as good as Cale Makar and better than Miro Heiskanen, the other two great defensemen that are in that mix of those three teams, but they certainly don't have a Nathan MacKinnon, and they might not have a Wyatt Johnston on that team. And I think that's the real issue for them going forward. But again, there's time for them to remedy that situation in the middle. And if they do that, then yeah, I think they stand toe-to-toe with anybody in the West.
Well, and I know that there's some Preds fans who are probably thinking this too. You know, how do you rate John Hines? I mean, with the roster he now has. I mean, look, I liked John Hines. I thought, you know, considering what he had to deal with coming in middle of the year and then COVID and all of that, like he did a decent job, and ultimately they decided to make the change. But I think he's done a good job in Minnesota since getting that job. But, you know, how do you rate him with a good roster?
Yeah, I mean, we'll find out, right? I mean, it's not only just a good roster, but it's also them finding a solution and goal that they've been looking for a long time as well, with Wallstedt looking like he's every bit the franchise goalie they've been hoping that he could be. You know, this is a team that's had strong defensive fundamentals. They've at times struggled a little bit offensively beyond what Kaprizov and Boldy give them. So, yeah, we'll see what kind of team John Hines can craft there. He certainly has the pieces to try to do something special.
Greg, this weekend we've got a really cool thing happening back-to-back. Toronto comes to town Saturday. The Rangers come to town Sunday. I know you live in New York and you got the Islanders, you got the Devils and the Rangers, all that happens. But, I mean, when you look at this, I mean, if you're a hockey fan living in the Deep South, I mean, what a weekend, right, with the Rangers and the Maple Leafs coming to town?
Sure. I mean, two teams that are extremely intriguing insofar as, like, you know, the seasons that they're having. In Toronto's case, it's them trying to move up the standings with the acknowledgement that their entire roster changed once Mitch Marner ended up in Vegas. You don't replace a 100-point winger like that. And I think they've really struggled to figure out what life after Marner looks like. And, you know, also Austin Matthews, their franchise player, has simply not been himself this year for whatever reason. He's had an uptick lately, but overall hasn't necessarily been himself. And so there's been a lot of hand-wringing in Toronto about that. And then the Rangers, you know, the Rangers are kind of what I thought they'd be, which is a team that is exhibiting a lack of depth in some places, especially on the blue line. That's probably going to keep them from really being a contender. But overall, it should be good enough to make the playoffs and has arguably – you know, one of the best goalies in the world, and Igor Shesterkin. So two intriguing teams that are still trying to kind of like find their footing and really make a run at it this year. But always exciting times when they come to town.
Like, how far do you live from like the Meadowlands? If you want to see the Devils play, how far do you live from there?
Oh man, you're showing a little bit of age on that one. They moved to Newark. Like,
did they? Like, oh my God. Okay.
Oh yeah, man. They moved to Newark like about 15 years ago, and so like, I can get there pretty easily. By car, it's probably about 40 minutes. There's like two different trains that can take you there too. But the easiest one for me is Madison Square Garden. I can hop on the subway and get there in about a half an hour, 25 minutes. And that's usually where I go and catch teams when they come to town on practice and stuff like that. So the hardest one to get to is the Islanders. That's one where you got to kind of plan your day around New York traffic to get it back, to get out there and then drive all the way back. So it's cool, man. I realize how lucky I am doing this job to have three teams in the area where there's always, you know, somebody in town and you can catch a game or catch a practice. And it really makes doing this job a lot easier.
That's good that I'm not up there because I'd be calling from the Meadowlands like, Greg, where are the Devils playing, damn it? Nobody
up.
Here.
Here's the funny part, right? So the arena they used to play in, Brendan Byrne Arena, it still exists. Like, it's still there. But surrounding it is like New Jersey's version of the Mall of America. So it's just this like empty shell of a building, like this ghostly building that's still there. And I think that you can go inside of it and stuff if you have an event or something. And it's next to this gigantic shopping mall. It's a real trip to go to that mall and see a place where they won, you know, Stanley Cups just kind of sitting there, not even being used.
I just think that what the Continental Airlines Arena, was that what it was called?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Vanderbilt play a Sweet 16 basketball game. That's an iconic, underrated, I think, buildings because there's a lot of things that took place there.
Dude, that's where I grew up. That's where I grew up watching the Devils. I grew up watching the Nets. And the thing I always remember about that place is my dad is extraordinarily cheap. So we used to sit like last row of the upper deck. And this is, that was an old building before they realized you could do like a mezzanine, you know?
Right.
So like if you were in the last row of the upper deck, you were literally wheezing from how high you have to climb to get to your seats. Because that's how the old stadium used to be built. I got nothing for love for that place. I was in the building game 4, 95 Stanley Cup final to see the Devils win the cup for the first time as a fan. Like it is, it's a special place for me. And my favorite thing about that place, by the way, the official attendance for hockey games at the Meadowlands was 19,040 people, because at the time, the last time the Rangers won the Stanley Cup was in 1940. So they made the attendance number for the Devils games the Rangers Stanley Cup curse year. I love that about that place.
I'm also jealous. You probably got to see Drazen Petrovic play basketball, didn't you?
He was my favorite player growing up, man.
Yes!
I got to see Drazen play. I got a Drazen jersey. I still remember my dad leaving a note on my door before school telling me about what happened with Drazen with the car crash.
Right.
But, yeah, for a while it was awesome to be a Nets fan because they had a collection of really sort of interesting players, him, Derek Coleman, Mookie Blaylock, and players like that. And you know, the whole existence of the franchise was basically to come see the players that come to town. I still remember going to Nets Bulls games when I was a kid, and I was probably one of 10 Nets fans in the building because everybody else was there to see Jordan.
Right. Oh, that's great.
Did you attend SummerSlam 1997 or SummerSlam 2007?
No, I don't think I did, but I did see a lot of WWF there when I was a kid, and I will tell you that the first when Jake the Snake Roberts first came to WWF, well before he became like a star, I remember seeing a match there with him, and he had the snake in the bag. And we were all kind of looking at the bag, and we're like, this thing's moving. What is in the bag? Because at that point, we didn't know what the gimmick was, right, where he's literally taking the snake out and draping it over his opponents. And so it was a trip to see him do it live before he actually, like, was on television and stuff.
Oh, fantastic.
You know, it's funny. Our question of the day, Greg, is are you or are you not terrified of snakes? I kid you not. That's our question of the day.
That's funny.
I will crush spiders. I have killed a rat. I am not a snake guy. Like I am at all. Like if I'm on a hike and I see something slithering, I'm like taking another pass around.
I'm with
it.
You.
I am not a snake guy at all.
Would you have done? I mean, if Jake the Snake would put a snake around your neck, would you be like, no, I'm not in
no.
this one.
Hell no.
I would have gone catatonic like I do at the dentist, where I would just kind of like walk to a happy place and just hope that it's over.
Oh, Greg, thank you as always. I think we talked like 10 minutes of hockey and 10 minutes of arenas, but this was fantastic.
That's all right.
So appreciate it as always. We're off next week, obviously. So happy holidays to you and the family.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy holidays, everybody. Thanks again for the time, and everybody stay safe, and hope everybody gets what they want at the holidays.
Yep, absolutely. We'll talk again soon. Thank you.
Take care.
Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer for ESPN, joins us every Thursday here on Chase and Big Joe. good stuff there. We'll come back with more from the Omni Nashville Hotel at Barlines on 102.5 The Game.
All right, here we go. Welcome back to the Chase and Big Joe Show, live at Barlines here at the Omni Nashville Hotel, downtown Nashville. So beautiful here. I'm trying to look at these bowl games that we had last night. And for some reason, ESPN.com likes to send me someplace else, which I don't want to go to do that. We had a bowl game last night. Hold on now. I'm trying to get down here. Hold on just a second here. Oh, by the way, the Pop-Tarts Bowl is happening soon. That's a week and a half away.
That's Xbox Bowl tonight as well.
Xbox Bowl. And that's Missouri State. Is that Butch Jones tonight?
In Arkansas State, you're correct.
Yeah, so last night we had the 68 Ventures Bowl. Delaware uniforms looking fantastic. Took down Louisiana 20-13. Old Dominion beat South Florida 24-10. Now, South Florida had a new coach last night because their coach has gone to Auburn to coach at Jordan Hare. So tonight we got Butchie on the field versus Missouri State, who's got a new coach. Then they're figuring out a deal to hire SMU's offensive coordinator. I just lost his name. tonight. I go, why are these bowl games so late? This game is at 9 Eastern.
I don't know, Joe. That's a great question. They had a bowl game, I guess, scheduled today at what, 2 or 3 in the afternoon?
Wait, today? There's no, not today.
No? Might have been yesterday. No.
Old Dominion took kicked off early yesterday in the Staff DNA Cure Bowl.
That's it, yeah.
And then the 68 Ventures Bowl won by Delaware. And so tonight you got the Xbox Bowl, Missouri State versus Arkansas State. And Butch Jones, Butchie's still out there making it, getting it done.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, that USF game, I think it was last night, the quarterback for that team ended up foregoing to play and became, I guess, the offensive coordinator or interim offensive coordinator?
Something weird. Yeah, and I didn't understand that, what all went on. I don't understand all these bowl, like opting out and guys not playing and guys playing but have declared for the portal. I don't understand. It makes my head hurt, all that's going on.
Yeah, there's some news with Josh Heupel saying that he talked to media today. So it would be like the only time that he talked to him before they go to Nashville.
Yeah, so thank you for that. So I get an email. Chase and I get an email from the Music City Bowl, and it says, please note a correction to the advisory sent out. William Inge, interim defensive coordinator, linebackers coach, University of Tennessee, will be representing the University of Tennessee at the coach's press conference and serving as DC at the game. Why is Heupel not doing this?
I don't know. That's a great question. I mean, he made it known in his, I guess, press conference today or yesterday that he said, quote, that this will probably be the one time you guys talk to me before the Music City Bowl. So that's all that was kind of really said. I mean, he kind of went into talking about how Merklinger has entered the transfer portal and, you know, saying it was a mutual agreement type thing. But, yeah, it's really odd. There are a lot of question marks around that.
Yeah, so I don't understand. Look, I don't understand a lot of things in life. That's why I am where I am. So we could the interim defensive – I just don't – why are you not talking to us? So I sent an email yesterday to Knoxville. It's like, hey, we'd love to have Coach Heupel on the show. You know, we're the official air quote radio station of the bowl game to have him come on. But now he's not going to. What is he afraid of? Is he afraid of getting questioned? Or is he recruiting? I don't know why you would miss this.
You know, Joe, it was kind of a question for everybody before the season began. And you could say it was, you know, far-fetched. But is it possible, Heupel, there's a little bit of a warming on the bottom of the chair there? I mean, this has to bring some concern, right?
I don't know. I just, now that you've brought that up, the email makes perfect sense now why he's not talking at all during the Music City Bowl. Does he not want to be here? Does he have something better to do? I don't know.
I've designated Dr. Crane to talk for me during that.
Right? I mean, hey, Josh, the alternative of the Music City Bowl is nothing, right? So be glad your team's here and got an extra 20 days of practice with your football team. Just nonsense. I don't understand all of that, but again, like I said, I don't understand a lot of things in life. But so anyway, good luck to Butchie tonight in the Xbox Bowl. I bet the swag, right? They're getting an Xbox tonight. All the kids.
I would think so. Hey, and you know what? They've already won though, because if you play for Butch Jones, you're a champion of life.
Tomorrow morning, it is a Myrtle Beach Bowl presented by Engine, Kennesaw State versus Western Michigan. That is kicking off at 10 a.m. And then tomorrow at 1:30. Man, the Union Home Mortgage Gasparilla Bowl, Memphis versus NC State, man. Where I go down there and have some fun down there in Memphis, Tampa, where it's been played.
I got great news for you, too, that all these bowls you're talking about, you can hear on yes. Sports Talk 8:30 a.m. So we got you covered throughout the day on Sports Talk 8:30.
You mean I get to hear Memphis tomorrow at 8:30, man?
You sure do. And tomorrow night at 6:30, Oklahoma will host
Alabama. And that's on the big dial.
That is on 102.5.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
God, I'd love to have gone there. If you could pick one game this weekend, would that be the one you go to out of the four?
Oh, man, that's a great question. Yeah, probably. Because I would say that one and then Miami A&M would have been a close second.
Right.
But I think to go to Norman – to see like
night game,
night game at Norman in December,
the Bahamas.
Alabama against Alabama, yeah, that would be pretty cool.
They played there last year, right? Didn't Oklahoma beat them like 30-3 something,
yeah,
and knocked them out last year?
Yeah, that was the one that when everybody started calling for DeBoer,
yeah, yeah. Did make the playoffs.
No, Tulane Ole Miss is intriguing, even though I think Ole Miss is going to win. It would have been more intriguing with Lane, I think, but. I don't know. I'm just kind of like, With Ole Miss now, I'm just kind of like, eh, whatever. Because I just feel like they've lost some luster. No doubt.
Yeah, well, your guy left, man, and went away. So, I don't know. It'd be fun to see Tulane beat them, but I think Ole Miss rolls.
Yep. 615-737-1025. We'll come back with more here from Bar Lines at the Omni on 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Thursday. We're at Bar Lines at the Omni Nashville Hotel. Joe, there is some big news out of college football.
Uh-oh.
Texas football has announced their new defensive coordinator will be Will Muschamp.
No way.
Yep.
That's not like an old pitcher from like 2008 and 2009?
No. No. They just tweeted it out 5 minutes ago.
So I wonder if his boy's transferring there.
That's what I was just wondering too.
Make some phone calls here in a little bit. Oh, my goodness.
Yep. So
Dr. Crane, it's too late, but I wonder when we interviewed Muschamp, did we ask him, I think our very last question we asked him was, will you ever coach again?
And he said, yeah, he said he wanted to get back in. So who was the, you got it?
Okay. Give him a second, pal. Everybody give him a second.
So yeah, Pete Kwiatkowski was the defensive coordinator.
Oh, for Monsters, Inc.?
Huh.
Is it Mike Wazowski?
But, yeah, I mean, they just tweeted that out. So.
What was the guy's name? It was there?
Pete Kwiatkowski, and now it's on the website.
Huh. Pete Kwiatkowski. Maybe him and Sully got a job together somewhere.
Texas football announces changes on defensive staff and hires Will Muschamp as the defensive coordinator.
That is fantastic. Oh, man. Like coming back home again. That's where he was 08, 09, 010, I think.
Yeah.
And he took the Florida job after Urban left, and then Florida didn't do good. South Carolina wasn't great. And then,
yeah, he said – so Sark announced that Pete Kwiatkowski and Dwayne Akina will not be retained, and that – Will Muschamp will be the defensive coordinator.
Couple million dollars to do that.
Yep.
Wow, man, that's good stuff right there.
He was, let's see, Muschamp previously directed some of the top defenses in Longhorn history during his tenure in Austin from 2008 to 2010, playing a vital role as Texas finished the 2008 season ranked number 3 before advancing to the BCS National Championship game during the 2009 season.
Holy cow, man. I thought he would stay out until his – because his son's the backup quarterback at Vanderbilt. I thought he would stay until his time – because remember he told us how much he loved rushing the field in Alabama and everything and all the things that happened watching his kid play football. And now
he's in Texas. I mean, I will say when I saw that on Twitter, I was like, okay, I need to make sure this is true. But it's actually Texas putting it out there.
Welcome back.
And I looked at you, and I'm like, okay, if he knew about this, he would have said something.
100%, man. We were the bunch of Will's friends Monday night out to dinner, Monday night.
Yeah.
And we all talked like one day he'll get back in that. But friend of the show, Will Muschamp.
That's a good move for him, I think.
If his boy could go with him.
Yeah.
Because his boy ain't seen the day of light. Well,
no.
Probably not there either.
No.
With Arch.
What did I see? I guess it was Heupel earlier. Was asked about getting a quarterback in the portal, and he said, well, we're probably going to add a quarterback unless we can get Phillip Rivers to come play for us.
But I won't talk to the Nashville media during the bowl game.
Yeah, that's weird.
Any luck on that avenue, Dr. Crane?
I do have the Will Muschamp clip, one of them.
Let's go, baby.
Is the coach able to stay quiet while watching these games, or once a coach, always a coach?
Well, I enjoy it. I do think from a defensive perspective a lot when I'm watching games. And, you know, Tim Beck and that offensive staff at Vanderbilt do a lot of really hard things to defend, and they've got a really talented team. And I sweat a lot watching it because I'm like, man, I'd hate to have to prepare for these guys.
Okay.
Friend of the show.
That's a good one.
Kind of gave a nugget there.
I thought I did follow up and say, are you done?
I thought one of us did that, yeah. But listen, here's the thing. he sits there and watches games and thinks about defensive-wise how to do things. Mm-hmm. Why not get paid $3 million and do the same thing, except get paid for your thoughts, man, and
here's
be a
the
coach?
Thing. Here's we all know how this works. Now, look, he is a friend of the show. I think what we have learned is Will's probably in that category of really good coordinator. Maybe that's his role.
Yeah,
but
right.
If he goes and has success at Texas – as the defensive coordinator, you can't tell me that one of these teams isn't going to be intrigued and at least talk to him.
Sometimes it's easy just to go run the defense.
Yeah,
buddy.
Right. I know, but I'm saying, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Eli Drinkwitz finally leaves Missouri.
Right.
Okay. You probably at least call.
Yeah, you call
Mississippi
but listen.
State.
You're not getting a 3 a.m. phone call.
No, I know.
Chase McCabe was at Tootsie's and exposed himself in the bathroom. I mean, yeah. You're not getting those things.
thanks for putting that out there.
Right, sorry.
It's not true.
I apologize. Sometimes you just want to coach, man. Just want to be a coach, man. You make nice money, coach the defense, not worry about everything else. He had enough of that at Florida, enough of that at South Carolina. Now just go and be the assistant coach of Texas.
Deep in the heart
of Texas.
Why not? Coming up next, we'll tell you what day it is. Celebrity birthdays, we'll call it a day. And, again, thinking about Greg Biffle, his family reportedly killed in a plane crash in North Carolina. And also, as we open the show, thinking about Terry Crisp and his family after his wife Sheila passed away last night after a battle with cancer. Tough day here on the show, but trying to make you laugh and have a little fun as we go, but thinking about all those folks and tragedies affected. We'll come back with what day is it and celebrity birthdays. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Thursday at the Omni Nashville Hotel at Bar Lines. And always appreciate them for having us. Again, our last show here of the year, but we'll be back after the first of the year. So thanks to Todd and everybody. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you. With that, let's get to what day is it and celebrity birthdays.
All right, first list we have Answer the Phone Like Buddy the Elf Day. So
worst movie ever.
Yeah. Arabic Language Day. Baked Cookies Day. So if you like gingerbread cookies or something, make some of those. Flake Appreciation Day. So like that'd be Snowflake. International Migrants
Day. No, it's appreciation for your friend that flakes out on everything.
Name names.
National I Love Honey Day. So if you like natural bee honey. National Ham Salad Day. Didn't know that was a thing. All right.
Barf.
Yeah, it looks gross. It does look like barf. National Regifting Day. That is
every day.
National Roast Suckling Pig Day. Delicious. National Twin Day. Shout out to my dad and aunt. National Wear a Plunger on Your Head Day. Interesting.
What's the purpose of that?
I guess if you want to be a unicorn or a swordfish or just, you know, like to wear stuff on your head.
Okay.
That's the best I got. I don't know what to tell you there. I mean, that's the truth.
Keep going.
That's all I got. No, that's up to you now.
Oh, I thought that's all you got on the wearing the thing on your head.
No, that's all I got.
All right, time for celebrity birthdays. You got to get these within two. We got a packed house here at the Bar Lines. Y'all want to play too? Yeah, let us know. All right, Chase, you go first. How old is former New York Knicks and Chicago Bull Charles Oakley?
Sixty-two.
Chase on the board, 1-0. Dr. Crane, former Vandy offensive coordinator. Former UCLA head football coach Carl Durrell. Lasted 1 year here.
Carl Durrell. Wasn't he at Colorado State at one point?
He was at Colorado, wasn't he?
Yeah,
no, he was at Colorado State. You're right. My bad.
I think he went to high school with his daughter, if I'm not mistaken.
You might have, because they were here. And
he was with Mason, right?
He got fired after the 2014 season.
Volleyball.
He said, you get out of here.
52.
55.
62. Chase, you're up next. Tennis player Arantxa Sanchez Vicario. She's beautiful. Good Lord. Arantxa Sanchez Vicario.
43.
41.
50 FOA. Dr. Crane, former Baltimore Raven, Derek Mason teammate, Peter Boulware.
51.
Chase up 2-0. Chaser, Jaden Daniels, Heisman Trophy winner, LSU. How old is Jaden Daniels? 25 exactly. 4-0. Dr. Crane, get back on board now. How old is Keith Richards? Now, you can get this within 75 years.
Keith Richards is 93.
84.
82. Chaser's up 5-0. Chaser, Steven Spielberg. Quick, your favorite Steven Spielberg movie?
Indiana Jones, probably. Steven Spielberg, I'm going to say, is 75.
78.
79's on the board. I'll go with E.T. Okay. Chaser, the guy that you model a lot of your things after, Brad Pitt. How old is Brad Pitt today? Missouri graduate, by the way.
57.
55.
62.
Wow.
Dr. Crane, how old is Tom Cruise's ex-wife, Katie Holmes?
She is 57?
52.
47. Oh. Chaser, how old is Christina Aguilera?
44.
45.
45 exactly. It's 5-3. We're getting close. Dr. Crane, Billie Eilish.
26.
25.
24. Oh. Chaser, Price or Rights, Dr. Grant, 6'3". All right, that's speed round. Comedian Ron White.
Ron is 63.
67.
69. Ooh, it's 6-4. I love this. Dr. Crane, how old is country singer Cowboy Troy? Somebody used to get really excited about country Cowboy Troy that Chase and I worked with. Hey, man.
And whatnot.
Right?
Cowboy
used to conversate a lot with Cowboy Troy.
I'm going to go 62.
48.
55. Singer Chase. Singer Sia. 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 Sia.
Sia. 28.
33. 50. Dr. Crane, country singer Randy Houser.
Randy Houser, 52.
55.
49. Our last one, it's 6-4. Dr. Crane, how old is Stone Cold Steve Austin?
I got to get
6-4.
Let's see here. Stone Cold, what? Is I'm going to go 58.
Chase McCabe.
61.
He is 61 exactly. Holy hell. Chase wins 8-4. Gets a challenge at the end and comes off the top rope and wins.
And there is only one thing I got to say.
Oh, hell yeah.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Dr. Crane, valiant effort, though, but Chase is going to pour that beer on your head.
What?
Dun, 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 dun. Well done. There you go, people.
Bow, bow, dun, dun, dun. He has such a bad – actually, I think it was like 30 years – okay, so it was 30 years ago today on his birthday where he debuted with the Million Dollar Man and was the ringmaster, which would – become Stone Cold Steve
Austin.
Oh,
nice. So what was his original name?
He was in WCW. He was Stunning Steve Austin. I think he was Superstar Steve Austin. And then he was the ring. He basically, the Million Dollar Man had become a manager, and he gave him the Million Dollar Belt. So he was the ringmaster. And then, like, a few months later, he became Stone Cold.
No chance he could have been the $6 Million Man, Steve Austin?
No. But he did. So his name was, his birth name is Steve Williams, and he changed it to Steve Austin because there was already a wrestler named Dr. Death Steve Williams.
Okay. Oh, there you go. A little backstory there for you, people.
So there you go. That is going to do it for us.
As we leave every show, listen, our message today that we sent out, look, if you're not speaking about it, that means you're carrying it and it gets heavy. So we ask you all the time, if you're going through something, please speak out. Please reach out to us. Please talk to us. We are here for you 24 hours a day. We're so grateful to the men who've reached out to us the last 2 years when you're going through anything. I've been there. Talking helps so much. So please reach out to us if you're going through something. Know that you are a fighter. And think of all that you've been through and you're still here. You are still here. You're still going strong, and we love you. Know that we love you more than anything else, and so does God. Have a great Thursday, my friends.
Amen to that. Peace, love, rock and roll, DVD coming your way next here on 102.5 The Game.